Kukui Vode, welcome to Brika Saka Mandalorian Podcast. My name is Cork.
My name is Marika.
And I'm Brett.
All right, and we are talking about the prisoner arc of Andor, and that is, I think they were called Narcona 5, No One's Listening, One Way Out, and then Daughters of Ferrix are the four. So I decided I wanted to do this slightly different than we usually do, and instead I'm going to go over like a quick summary of the shit that happened with each character line, and then talk about like the overall themes of the episode. So we actually have like a discussion rather than we end up just getting distracted by every little detail.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I feel like I forgot how much Mon Mothma is in this.
Yeah, happens
like,
in this.
That
yeah.
all of like Mon Mothma and Val, there's a lot on Chandrilla, because I feel like I was only thinking
on Coruscant, you mean?
Yeah, on Coruscant with all the Chandrilla. I feel like I was only thinking of like One Way Out, which just that one's very focused on like we're just in the prison. But I guess good testament to the episode is that it feels like we're stuck in prison the entire time, though we're like really not. We're like in lots of other locations. Yes.
Yeah, so I'm actually gonna leave the prison summary till the end for that like the very last part of it. But yeah, as you were saying, Mon's in these episodes a lot. So during these episodes, Mon is basically having a bunch of her little charity Senate meetings. And we're also getting more information about her and Tay, as well as her continued family problems. And we have this, we find out that like her and Tay were like dating as kids or whatever. And like Piran was their friend and he used to be like cool and rebellious. And he's not now. He's weird. And basically,
Republican.
Yes, And basically, she's having problems with how she was moving her money around and doing the donations. And Tay is trying to help her with that because the Imperials are actually looking into it.
They're auditing people.
Yeah, and also are talking about with like the whole Senate stuff. She's trying to get votes because she doesn't agree with the PORD, the prisoner ordering.
We're doubling everyone's sentences and arresting people for jaywalking.
And that's when she has that whole conversation with the senators about, like, oh, these are dangerous times, and, you know, if you're not doing anything wrong, then why should you care? You know?
Yeah, which is
very
like exactly
Patriot
like the
Act.
Patriot Act.
Yes.
Why can't I play Harry Potter? I
Shut
don't
up.
Support that stuff.
No, but, like, that whole thing she says, like, well, I'm afraid of what your definition of wrong is. So we also have her. Well, first we do have Vel and Cinta on Ferrix before. Like I said, I'm jumping all over here.
Yeah.
So Vel and Cinta were on Ferrix looking shit up because they're kind of supposed to kill
Cassian.
And that's when they like break up and Vel ends up going back home and Cinta stays, basically saying like, too bad, like, this is what has to happen.
Yeah, what is the exact line that Cinta says some exact line to her, and then she...
You love me because I'm the mirror of me?
Not that one, but that one is really, like, it's something he says about, like the rebellion has to come first, or, like, then we can do all of this later, and then...
I told you this, like, the fight would always come first.
Yeah, and then I think later Vel then says that to Mon as well, but... That scene, I think, annoyed me a little bit because, like, that's the only time in this arc we see them together. And, like, yeah, I just felt like that's a definitely, like, yeah, they say I love you, like, holding hands, but, like, Cinta's, like, not really in focus, and it's, like, focusing on Vel.
It's focusing on their hands.
Yeah, for, like, though. Like, most of the time, when she says you love me, that's not in the hands.
Yes,
like,
that's true.
But that is after, when she, but then, like, yeah, Cinta's kind of mean to her. Like,
I do also kind of want to frame that as, like, the whole artistic choices that Cinta has completely disengaged herself from that part of her life.
Yeah.
She's decided she can't have that. So I kind of like, in that sense, that she barely even seems like she's having any thoughts or feelings about this.
Yeah.
Like, she's not even allowing herself to be upset that this relationship is ending.
I don't think it's ending.
Well, but being put on hold for right now.
Yeah, yeah. Or basically, because Cinta's basically telling her, like, not really, more like...
This isn't what's important right now.
I can't be distracted
by this.
Yeah, and then...
Yeah, so we have... Vel comes to visit Mon on Coruscant. And Mon is still trying to, like, fight in the Senate, and it's pretty much going fucking nowhere. With her... her visits with Vel, I really like these whole conversations they have. And for showing even more how disconnected, like, Mon is, because Vel's already pretty disconnected from the rest of our rebels.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
you know what I mean? She's already in, like, the privileged class of the on-the-ground rebels. And then you see how much more she's serious about it than Mon is. It kind of, like, shows how disconnected Coruscant really is.
Well, because it's kind of the thing of, like, yeah, they have that one really good conversation on the, like, giant couch where Mon's, like, almost crying because she's, like, realizing over the thought that, like, maybe someone could catch her, like, financial crimes. Yeah. And, like, Vel just went on a mission where literally everyone except her and this guy she didn't know died.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. During her whole plotline here, we also have Tay does find a sketchy solution dealing with basically, like, a smuggler kind of drug dealer. Criminal.
I thought it was, like, a mob boss.
Mob boss kind of guy.
Yeah, like a mob boss, or, like, a sketchy billionaire type
of guy. Sketchy billionaire basically saying that he'll cover the money for her, but he wants a meeting and to talk. During that meeting, we find out that what he wants is to, or at least what he suggests, is their children meeting with the possibility of an engagement.
His 14-year-old son meeting her 13-year-old daughter.
Yes.
Yes.
So we're basically talking about arranged child marriage here.
Well, yeah, because this first episode, we find out that Mon and Perrin got married when they were 15.
Yes, we also
And then she was allowed to do a senator when she was 16. Yes. I feel like senators so young.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what their thing is with young senators. What
Was it Padme? Like,
There's some in Clone Wars too that are like young as well. Yeah, so we have that, and she says no-ish, kind of. She says no, but he basically calls her out on the bullshit.
Yeah.
And we also have, like, at the end of this little arc, Mon and Vel talking, and we can tell that Mon is considering this. That she doesn't want to, but she's not. And we have her daughter, Cleta, I think that's what it is. Her and her friends doing, like, the weird trad wife culty stuff.
Oh, that's so funny when Vel walks in and is like, what straight nonsense is this?
Yeah. And there's something about that part where Mon's just sitting there sipping her wine quietly, watching from, like, the other room.
Not really saying anything. Like, and then her, like, gay cousin comes in and be like, bitch, what?
Yeah. Like, yeah,
the kids like it because they're pretending that they're back at home.
Yes. So I will want to talk about that a little bit later, but I just want to get through these little summaries. So on that, I am going to skip over to Deidre. And that's pretty much all that happens with Vel as well. Oh, Vel does go to Luthen's shop at the very end and kind of talks to Cleta. Or not Cleta. Clea. And is like, he needs to talk to me. And she like has that whole like, what did you do? Like, what have you done? And she's like, you have Eldani. I have every day. Yeah. I do this all the time.
And I did like in depth that Vel was like, clearly was getting all this information from Cinta. So I like that they still at least have this like working relationship thing, though. Like their actual like romantic relationship kind of might be like on a hold.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I like that because I like the thought of them like working together because it seemed like Vel just kind of, I'm glad that scene was there, so, like, it's still, like, Vel's really doing something for the Rebellion and didn't, as Cinta said, like, why don't you just, you know, run home to your rich family or something?
Yeah, so during all this, Deidre is, she starts off this arc by investigating Cyril, who has been basically putting in sketchy reports about Cassian to try to, I don't know, help find him in some way.
And he wants him to be found, like, for whatever. So he's like, he didn't pay his taxes. He has an outstanding parking ticket. Just, he needs child to pay his child support.
Just basically trying to, get someone to find him, pretty much. And she finds out then, well, he finds out that the whole Ferrix report was basically fucked up.
Yeah.
And he really can't tell her anything that was missing. And
because he didn't even get to read the report.
Yeah, she's pretty much like, all right, you're worthless, whatever, fuck off. But at that point, that's when he starts stalking her. And he's also, like, most of this arc, he's honestly just, like, we have this whole thing of him, like, trapped with his mom and and in his job. He's just in this very mundane nothingness. Yeah. And at the very end, he gets the call from the Scott that's saying he has information on
Scotty.
Yes. And so Deidre is spending this time looking for Axis and then trying to find more information on him. During all of this, she kind of connects Cassian back to the the like star map of Ferrix and possibly Eldani. So that's when they really start cracking down on Ferrix, and which ends up ultimately leading to her torturing Pak and Bix. She eventually catches the rebel pilot, and they decide to basically
stage his death.
Yeah, stage his death so that the rebels keep coming and don't get spooked.
Yeah.
And at the very end, she says that they should go along with the funeral that is happening on Ferrix. Speaking of, Ferrix has basically spent this time with Bix and Brasso trying to help and take care of Marwa.
Seeing Bix like she was before, I know, the torture is really devastating. Yes, I was like, oh, God.
And again, are we talking about that bit right now, or
what were you gonna say?
Let's make quick comments. Let's just go on for 10 minutes.
I was just saying the torture just like very much show don't tell, because you never hear what she's hearing. Yes. It's just the,
that was such a way to make it so creepy. Oh my God. We can't even let you hear it. You just think of the worst thing imaginable, which is like
the actress killed it.
Yeah, she was really good.
Yeah, so they're concerned about Marwa and her talking about her rebel shit and everything. Mm-hmm. They try to get help, but she refuses to. She knows what she wants. They neither know where Cassian is, but feel they need to contact him.
Mm-hmm.
So she ends up contacting Luthen with the hope of contacting...
Yeah, or he might know where Cassian
is. And that's when Pak gets... Well, both of them get arrested because of that. At the very end on Ferrix, we have those spies that are walking around at the end, as they're starting to crack down on Ferrix around the funeral. Oh, so we have, the one guy. And
the guy who's like an undercover cop at a music festival. While Cinta's like, why you suck at this?
Yeah, and Marwa dies, and we're kind of getting ready for the funeral. Mm-hmm. And we have the whole, we have Brasso taking care of B2 and like the whole kind of community there.
Yeah.
We also, I think this is a little loud. Yeah, so then the last person that we're really talking about is Luthen. And his whole arc during these is dealing with Saul.
Yep.
With Saul Guerrera. He comes initially, tries to get Saul to help Krieger. Saul basically is like, no, we're enemies because I'm still a separatist. And
I guess I will ask my question later.
Oh, do you what?
It's going to... I don't understand the difference between separatists and rebels, and I was going to ask you to explain that to me, but why don't we do that when the longer talking about a thing?
Okay. And, he pretty much is, and Luthen's like, he asks Luthen what he is, and Luthen basically just doesn't answer.
Yeah.
And that's when Saul says that whole thing of, like, I'm the only one with clarity of thought. I love that so much.
But didn't they all say that?
Exactly. That's why it's so good. I love it. The only other things Luthen really does is he has the meeting with the spy, the Imperial spy, and that with the whole speech with the sunless place, I made my mind a sunless place, his whole speech about what being in the Empire, or what being in the Rebellion means. And lastly, we have him come back when Saul says that he is going to join Krieger, and Luthen pretty much has to tell him,
like, we're sacrificing Krieger, you can't.
Yes. And Saul has that whole realization that, like, he's watching everyone, and that's a whole shit show that they decide, yes, it's better to not say anything. And he has this cool little ship fight, which is mysterious and weird, and continues to build his intrigue.
Oh, yeah, that was cool. Yeah.
All right, so those are our, like, side plot line shit that's going on.
Now we get to our fucking boy.
Yeah, and then, our main, Cassian is going to prison on Arcana 5. And when we first start, we have him, like, in that whole, I don't know, like, sorting thing where they're putting him on the transports.
Yeah.
And, like, we have all, like, the kind of the bureaucracy of it, of, like, you know, them getting handcuffed on there, taking off their shoes, you know.
Yeah, and it's to the point of, like, he doesn't even know, like, what happens, where he's going, and the guy's just like, bus, they don't call buses, but like, he's literally like, transport 5, and he's like, what? And he's like, transport 5, and then he just pushes him, and he's like, wait, I don't even know what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when he gets to prison, we find out that the floor is electrocuted, and the guards basically have like, dumb snowboard boots that protect them, and everyone is barefoot. With
rubberized soles.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so... it's basically a factory, and they have to build, like, a certain part, and he has, like, a little group that he meets, and there's Kino, the lead of, like, the floor.
Surprise Andy Serkis.
Yes, Andy Serkis.
As Andy Serkis for the first time on screen?
Yeah, I know.
No, he was in, Black Panther. The first one, he was a villain.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, I saw someone made some excellent joke of that it was Black Panther with their Tolkien white guys, because it was, The guy who played Bilbo.
Martin Freeman.
Yeah, and then him.
Yeah.
So the Token White guy. Yeah. Also from Token Properties. Ooh. Anyway.
Yeah, so the main people he meets in his prison are Kino, Melshi, Olaf, and, fuck, I meant to look up his name. We did this last time.
Oh.
The younger black guy.
The little kid with the twists.
Yeah.
Let me see.
Yeah, and at this beginning, this first episode, we really just have him struggling to accept it.
I love how he just, like, basically dissociates that first time.
Yes.
And we're
just,
but yeah, like.
And how subtle it is, but how serious it is at the same, like, how subtle it is, but how obvious it is to see. Yeah. During the second episode, he decides that, fuck all that, he is gonna rebel.
Yeah. Like, we're leaving.
Yes. And he is forming a plan with, Melshi and, I think, no, it's something with a B. It's like Bur...
B-I-R-N-O-K? Burnock?
Burnock? Burnock. It's Burnock, I believe. Yeah. So, Melshi and Burnock, and... but he knows that they're fucked unless they get Kino.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he spends this whole episode just trying to convince Kino that he should tell him what he knows. Kino clearly knows way more than anyone else, and he needs to give them that information. Kino is like, no, fuck that. I'm almost done. None of this is important.
Yeah, he has less than a year left, so he's like, no, I'm not gonna fuck this up.
Yeah. He eventually changes his mind. After there's talk of something really big happening on floor 2.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was just looking at it. Taga's the guy who knows sign language.
Yes, Taga, yes. So we figure out something really big is going down on
Something's floor happened 2, on, yeah, in the hotel.
And shit's getting weird and really serious, and they've gotten stricter. Before you could, like, chat, kind of hang out on the tunnels. Now it's like you have to be on program time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So something happened. When Olaf has a stroke, only, like, 20 days or something, like, 12 days or something.
I think it was 40. It was so much longer.
Because
he, like, said, like, you only have 40 shifts. It's like, 40?
Yeah.
Like, God, I don't think this guy's gonna make it, like, 4.
Yeah.
Like,
so, we find out that he had had a stroke, and the med tech guy basically euthanizes him, and tells them about floor 2, and that things are only getting worse, and that they basically fried everyone on floor 2 because someone had gotten released and then got sent back
to
Narcana.
To floor 4.
No, yeah, they were released from 4 and then sent
to 2.
So they killed everyone on 2 to keep them quiet.
Yes.
About the mistake, yeah.
At that point, Kino does decide to agree, kind of, and him and Cass have, like, a whole confrontation at the beginning of the next episode. Where Cassian is like, you know, this only works now. It only works with a new man. Like, we have to do it now.
Yeah,
because
they're going to be sending someone into a place. Oh,
yes.
Well, yeah.
Soon they're going to crack down even harder.
Yeah.
Like, this is our last chance. And Kino eventually agrees. And they end up basically using a pipe that Cassian was sawing at to distract and then...
Short
the floor.
Yeah, they, like, flood the bathroom.
Essentially they trip the breaker.
And stop the lift halfway so that they can kind of use it to climb out. And they basically throw shit at the guards.
Yes.
I was going to say, I love that, like, with my... just because I'm an electrician, the knowledge of electric was just like, yeah, flood the floor. Then they can't energize. It's like, well, they can, but it's going to go really bad. And then once it happens, they can't reset it until they get a new breaker in there.
Right, well, that was the thing. Is it's like, if that one guy wouldn't have still been half on the floor...
He would have.
And died real quickly because of that, would it have even been turned off?
No.
Right, it needed something.
It needed something as a conduit for ground.
Do you think Cassian knew that?
I think that
the water still would have caused a lot of problems for any time they tried to energize it.
Okay.
But the fact that the guy was there definitely caused... I'm going to
say
space breaker on a trip.
Hopefully something else would have... The
GFI stopped working. You know that thing that doesn't allow you to bathe with your toes?
Maybe they were hoping that something else would be connected.
Maybe there was
or
something.
Or maybe it was just a lucky... I mean, not a lucky bite. That guy ended up dying.
But
like
they're lucky.
That ended up happening and being better for everyone else.
Or also, we know that the whole system is run on, like...
Generators.
Hydroelectric. So maybe they were just hoping that would... Somewhere that the power would, you know, it would fuck up somewhere
or
something.
Or maybe they have to come
or it was
deal
just
with the
a
flood.
Distraction
maybe
or someone would
have
yeah.
the flood.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I like the idea that they purposely shorted the floor.
I think that was their hope, that it would short the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there was that whole idea of if that guy wasn't there, would it have?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they end up getting over onto the floor. They make it up to the control room. Cassian and Kino are able to subdue the guards and...
subdue?
And basically get everything under control. Turn off the generators so they can't be turned back on. And, you guys both looked like you were...
I was trying to time it so that we would have, like, a beer, like, a click of one beer opening and then the next one, but...
Beer is pretty generous when you're talking about the alcoholic monster.
It's good.
Monster this week.
Yeah, I bought alcoholic monster.
It's called The Beast. The Beast Unleashed. Did they just steal this from King's Island? It literally says The Beast Unleashed.
Oh, what is the white one, though?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, I like the blue one.
I know, I was hoping the light blue one. This is the one this type is what I drink in class, because it's the only one other than the green that Cincinnati State has in their vending machines.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like later in life, this is going to be really nostalgic for paramedic school for me, because that's the only time
I about Diet Amp. I used to go to the...
Oh, wow, this tastes just like
the... sessions for AP government, and I would drink Diet Amp during that. Yeah. Anytime I drink...
I don't like the regular
kind. I know, but you just got to see how much that actually tastes like the regular kind.
Oh, quick, I might have been 17 last time I had the regular kind. That smells closer to the blue kind.
It tastes exactly like it. This is the one where I was playing beer pong.
This does taste exactly like the normal. Like
they did a good job.
Absolute
zero. I think it's because they realized that Kyle's were aging out of, high school.
It was a good move on their point. Oh. It was a good.
Did you drink that alcoholic, the Mountain Dew one that you got at the gag gift in Christmas?
No.
I think one of us opened it.
I think it was a Code Red one.
I would have drank it if it was a Code Red. I didn't get the Mountain Dew.
I think Evan stole it from
Evan,
you.
Yeah,
right.
I had it in the
Stephen
King book.
That's right.
No, by the way, the Mountain Dew one's not bad.
Yeah.
Except for the dark, the black cherry one, which tastes like cough syrup. Because anything cough syrup.
Well, that's like the Mike's Hard black cherry. Yeah. That just tastes like cough syrup.
Black cherry alcohol is cough syrup.
Never turns up right. No.
But yeah, the monster tastes like fucking monster.
I like, we're like, we're going to do these in little chunks of character storyline so we don't get
distracted.
No, we just went on a tangent about alcoholic monster.
Yeah. Anyway, so the riot goes pretty fucking well.
It's good.
Yeah. Kino is able to get on the speakers and inspire everyone to fight and get out, and this is their only way, one way out, blah, blah, blah. So, it goes extremely well. I mean, there's no one snitches or anything like that, like classic prison break kind of drama that's added.
Which is actually good for once.
Yes. I have a lot to say about that.
We kept worrying about the
snitches.
Second.
Yeah. So, but when we get to the top and we're having our little celebratory moment, we're free, we find out Kino can't swim.
I'll cry.
And he is...
That's not what he says.
I can't swim.
He's laughing and he says,
I know.
I can't swim.
I know.
Because he never thought they'd get that far.
And in fact, I don't want to get more detail, but like the realness of the fact that like Cassian's like, what? And he's like, and he literally can't hear
him.
And
then, like, what did he say?
And they're trying to figure it out and then just like, they
the
just get pushed because everyone's running.
So.
Because I literally kept saying to you, like, they're not going to kill Andy Serkis, right? Like, he's a
like,
big name.
I literally said to you, I said, there's been one in each of these storylines. I guess not really in the first one, but I was like, this is going to be just like Nemec. I was like, he's our kind of moral, not moral, but he's, our touchstone character of this arc.
Well, it was like Nemec convinced Cassian to join the rebellion, and then Cassian's convincing Andy Serkis to, like, do the prison break.
Yes. Yes,
but still, it's just like he's the big name. Why would they kill the big name? It's absurd. And then just like no one's safe.
I was like, that's
just like the movie. No one's safe.
Yeah, that's this show.
Oh yeah, because even like the little twist kid gets killed before they even get out of the room. Like
they immediately shoot him down. Yeah,
yeah.
Wow, actually, the black character.
It literally. I'm going to talk about the way I really like their casting for stuff with the casting of the prison. So Cassian and Melshi are the only ones we see actually make it. They get on the beach. And in the next episode, we see them able to escape the planet. They're like hiding and there's a lot of stuff there, but they are eventually able to escape the planet with help from some like native species of Narcana that is pissed. That doesn't like the Empire either.
Yeah.
So they're narrowly able to escape. They go to Miami
1.
I was thinking of the Niamas the Niyamu's Morlana 1 mix. Or Morlana 1 Club mix. That's what one of the, that song is. But it's like, so that song Niyamu's, the one that plays there, that I can't describe it.
I'm not going to play it because
I don't know what we're talking about.
It's like a cool club mix.
Oh, okay.
It's the cool song when he's like walking on the beach.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
But then that's also played when he's in like the brothel in the...
Yeah.
In the first episode, okay. But that one is called the Merlano 1 Club Mix, or the Milano Club Mix, and I love it so okay. much. That's the best version of it. Because there's also one that plays in Mon's house during, like, as, like, a smooth jazz version of it
during one of the little parties.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway, they're able to get off, and Cassian gets his money and his stuff back. And
yeah, thankfully no one cleaned the top of the shower.
Yeah.
Found that there.
And so he calls home real quick and wants to make sure everything's okay.
What does that say about the cleaning staff? They're just getting everything. It's like Rio Hotel. They're just getting everything that's visible.
Looking at the top of the shower. Yeah. There's no point to clean that.
So he calls to basically say that he's safe. Yeah, and he's like tell Mara.
And then the guy is like, wait, Cassian. And he's like, don't say names. And he's like, wait, but I have to say something.
Cassian, your mom's dead. So at that point...
I cut to Cassian crying at a payphone.
Yeah, he... Melshi's basically like, someone's gotta know about this. Like, I can't just, what if we're the only ones that made it?
Yeah, I know.
Like someone's gotta know about this.
Upset Melshi's giving me a deal. Like, what if we're the only people who survived? Like, we have to tell them.
Yeah.
Like,
so he basically says that he has to go and, Cass still seems pretty traumatized. And
yeah, he's just like standing on a beach crying.
Yeah, and Melshi asks, like, everything okay? And he's like, yeah. Everything okay. Yeah. I hate it. And so they separate, and that's pretty much where we end with all the characters for this arc. This, I think, is my favorite arc. I love so many different things about this one. But, like, what I want to talk about first, of like, the overall theme, I feel like fits. This is where I feel like there is truly an overarching theme with every single character arc and every little portion of it, and I think that whole thing is that, like, everyone is in a prison in the system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, every single arc, so we have, like, you know, we have the obvious one, the prisoners.
Yeah.
But we also have, like, Cyril and his co-workers are very much in, like, their little cubicles in that whole thing. He's trapped in his mom's house.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, there's a lot of, like, that view of him in the booths with his mom. Is very similar to when we're looking at the prison cell straightforward.
That is such a good point. I thought that, like, subconsciously had that thought.
Yes.
But, like,
Yeah, the framing of those are a lot. We also, I mentioned it before, we have Mon a lot in this time. She's been backed into, like, the corner. She's at risk of being arrested and trying to find a way out. And we continually see her, like, in that, like, hexagon.
Yeah.
Like, everyone is framed in that hexagon. And then we see that that's the prison shape at the very end.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, we have Vel and Cinta basically deciding that they have to, like, that they can't actually live right now, they have to fight.
And then even when Vel gets back, Piran keeps getting on, like, well, when the hell are you gonna get married? Like, you're gonna have to get a widower at this point, like, you're too fucking old.
Yes.
And then Mon's being like, oh my god, like, we're, like, so even she's, like, trapped in the heteronormativity of Chandrilla,
Yeah, we even have Deidre as, like, because before we were talking
she's just trapped by...
Not by ambition, by her, like, want to succeed. And also
tie her up in a basement.
Yeah, and then also is being stalked.
Yeah.
We also have, you know, Bix and Pac, but also all of Ferrix has pretty much always been in a prison, in a way. Like,
yeah, but now it's just much more...
Now it's visible.
Yeah.
And then we even have Luthen saying about the whole thing about him and his, you know, and his son, this place, that he's locked himself away.
Oh, yeah, and he tells the little informant guy he can't leave.
Yeah, like, he can't leave. He's trapped. They're all trapped. Like,
That's
what I think I like most about this, is even if you're not consciously thinking of it, like, I feel like each of the stories, while so separate, and on both sides of it, feel so connected in their themes for these ones. Yeah, that's one of my favorite things. I also, what I was talking about, like, the casting, of, like, most of the people in the prison are men of color.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think...
Not even just, like, straight up just, you know...
Just, like, everyone.
Like,
White men are definitely seem to be in the minority of it. Mm-hmm. And
I was saying, it's a very diverse prison.
Yes, which is obviously, you know, yeah. And I mentioned this to you, is that they're all humans, but there were like aliens and stuff with him at one point with the rest and stuff.
So we're just going to assume they got sent off to death camps.
Right, or they were put into more vicious slavery.
Defaulted to death camps because, like, I mean, obviously, they're fascist, but also the Empire is very pro-human, anti-alien.
They don't like aliens. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
And I mean, that's the whole thing with the Twi'leks, would be worked as slaves until they died.
Yeah.
Purposefully. Same with the Wookiees.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, still, number one, hope that's not in Jedi Fallen Order 2. The thin Wookiees is still gross.
Oh, yeah, how they looked. Yeah, that was a weird one. Yeah, and I also like that, I think that it's very intentional that one of our only white, like, our pretty much, yeah, we got Melshi and there's the one guy with the really blue eyes. But other than that, our only, like, main prisoner that's white is Kino. And I like that he's the one that is in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the one that is convinced that he has some kind of privilege over them. Yeah. That if he just works in the system, it'll work out for him.
Yeah.
You just gotta pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah.
While everyone else can see, like, no, you are actively working against your interests.
Yeah.
But he's like, no. I'm just gonna follow the rules. I just need to get this, you know, do my time, keep my head down, and I'll be fine.
Yeah.
But he has to slowly realize that, like, no, that's not gonna happen.
Well, remember, he actively defies them trying to tell him that they're lying to him the whole time, too.
Yeah.
Because they're like, hey, something happened on floor 2. Shut up, no it didn't, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he's like, you don't know that for a fact, like, we, you know, nothing gets about here, like, nothing gets
like,
here
quick
enough.
How much did, like, it take for any, like, message from police?
Yeah, he's fake news.
Yeah.
Right, but he still wants to believe that if he does everything right, he just needs to work the system correctly.
The system
correctly.
Will work for him if he does
everything
right.
Yes, and then the other people...
Well, yeah, because if he's done nothing wrong, what does he have to fear?
Right. And, like, the whole... And then the mostly people of color population is like, no, like, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to be able to... Like, they don't give two shits about us. Nobody's listening.
Yeah.
No one cares enough about us.
Yeah.
Like, and he has to kind of be convinced into that position. No, what were you going to say?
Nothing.
Oh.
No, stupid brain bubble. Nobody's listening, and then Linkin Park just announced they're doing a new album.
So, yeah, I think that, I don't know, I really love how much that, like, this everyone's in a prison.
Yeah.
Is very much here in this whole thing, and what was I going to say about, not really related to this, but one of my favorite things about this one, too, is, like, you know, I'm always loving, like, the musical score, and I think that the musical score in this,
again,
is perfect.
Oh.
Like, I think that I think this is probably my favorite score of the Star Wars. Even, like, even beat out, like, The Mandalorian, because I like how flexible this score is, that our theme is overplayed in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the Mando theme is perfect, it's great, it does exactly what it's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear the song, you immediately think of The Mandalorian, and when you think of The Mandalorian, you immediately think of the song.
I even, like, Boba Fett's. Love
yeah,
Boba Fett
was good too. Like, the music has been really good, but this one I feel like is different. Like, he really knows how to actually,
whoever,
like...
Whatever they put on sound is just...
For this? Nicholas Bertelli, I think? Nicholas
yeah.
Ber... Yeah.
I just meant in general for the show, it's just...
Yeah.
All the money. All the money deserved.
We'll probably make it now that they work for Disney.
One of the things I like so much about him, though, is his, like... He really seems... focused and tuned in to the ideal of music as telling a story rather than just, like, the theme that is giving you the emotional connection to the story being told, is that for him, like, for this, I feel like the music is really telling. So I was right. Nicholas Bertelli.
Yeah. Bertel.
But, like, honestly, the My Name is Kino Loy song it's so good. And I'm obsessed with that song. I could talk for an hour about how great that song is. But there's, like, this wonderful thing where it starts really slow and timid, and it, like, continuously, like, more instruments are brought in, the music gets more complex, and the score itself, like, the notes themselves get higher and higher. So even without anything else, it feels like it's climbing. Like,
mm-hmm.
It feels like it's moving from the bottom up. and then has this huge triumphant thing at the end, and then it falls off and is left with just the normal theme of the floor. As we're realizing that Kino led everyone to freedom, and he's still stuck there.
Honestly, trying to remember the song. When you're at, like, the floor, it is the lower notes as well.
Yeah, it's lower notes. It's mostly, like, percussion. It's very, like, industrial.
And rudimentary.
Yeah. And, like, in the way that that, like, song starts, it starts kind of with that. But then it has, like, brass added, and, like, we get some lower woodwind, or not woodwind, some lower, like, strings. And then you're getting up with, like, violin, viola, the trumpets being really, like, in the high pitch now. It's great. I love that. Or, like, the whole thing that, like, they recorded the funeral march on scene, like, on location. And the fact that, like,
it pays off so much better.
The instruments are so clearly out of tune. Like, they're not great. Like, the sound isn't perfect.
You can hear the people step as they're playing.
And you can hear them breathe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which,
here's the thing, as a trained musician, like, a professional musician.
Knows how to not do that.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they could fake not doing that.
Yeah.
So I feel like they had to find semi-amateur musicians to get that sound.
So and how people much who were in marching band in high school but didn't do anything afterwards?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. And it tells so much more of a story than, like, if they were perfect. Because if they were perfect, it would feel almost...
real.
Well, they're not like the Ferrex Orchestra. They're just everyone on Ferrex who has a trumpet.
Right. Like, so it's just the community, like, doing it. So, you know, they probably do this, you know, maybe once a month.
Yeah.
Maybe one person dies a month in the community. And yeah. That's,
I was going to say, does everyone get a funeral march, or is it really only people of merit?
Yeah,
like,
it might
Marva?
Be like, well, it might depend on how big the person is, how big the march is.
I was
going to
say, like, all of a sudden there's like 17 new buildings for one march.
Yeah, we've got an entire community center, but are the people who died in February.
This is the Boys and Girls program.
Yeah, but like that's
made by
and
dead
how
boys
much,
and girls.
How much like that plays to the story, and I feel like he hits that really well. I'm just obsessed with the "My Name Is Kino Loy" song. I think it's incredible,
I see,
and I wanted to talk about
the march
it.
For me.
That, yeah,
the march
is great
is
too.
My
the march
my jam
is great too. This also continues like we were talking about like Cassian's like. Radicalization arc is this is where like he still was ignoring it, but when he gets to the prison
he can't avoid it anymore.
Yeah, and in a way he's almost like Kino in that way where
yeah.
he had to like be put into it to really be like there's no well Kino thought he could work in it and survive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cassian thought he could just avoid it and survive.
Yeah,
and once he's really in it he realizes that that's not
well
case.
I feel like it's also the thing of like it seems like Kino's probably been there a long time, so maybe he's reckoned with, like, yes, he did do something wrong, and now that's why he's like, now I'm going to be good, maybe I'll get out on good behavior or something.
Yeah.
But Cassian was literally walking to the store. He was doing nothing.
Yeah.
And then he's, like, there for 6 years. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like that we now have him be, the one that has to radicalize.
Yes.
Yeah, he's
else,
the
yeah.
one that has to say, no, this is wrong. Like, how can you not, like, there's nothing we can do about this, like, they don't care about us.
Yeah. I like that he brings it back that, like, nobody cares, nobody's listening. It's the same thing he said to Nemec of, like, the Empire doesn't care about you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
they're not going to think about how you're going to use mercenaries because they're not thinking about you at all.
Yeah.
And he's just like, no one's listening to us. They don't think we're going to do anything. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they think they have complete power over it. And that, the, like, that line, I love the whole thing where he's talking about that they need to go now. I love that whole scene. Of him and Kino in that in the like dressing area.
Yeah, and I do
where they're like almost fighting and they keep like being on and off like get on program get, and
yeah.
they're like trying to convince each other and he like says that whole thing of like they just fried 100 men for like, you know.
To keep them quiet.
Yeah, and he's like that sounds like power and he's like power doesn't panic.
Yeah,
like,
I do love
not.
The whole yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which,
like they don't have
oh my
any
god,
power.
If I'm going to get a Star Wars tattoo,
yeah.
power doesn't panic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. It was so good. And in that whole exchange between them, of him being like, this is the plan. We have to do it now. There's no other option.
And I like how it's kind of like set up that how Cassian like kind of has an ideal of how it goes. Because when he's first being taken in, it's just because of the like incompetency and the low staffing that he's standing there for so long.
Yeah.
Being able to see every single part of how they let someone in. Which we know he's that observant because he could tell... like, yeah. which handed everyone on Indali was after not even being with them all that long. Mm-hmm. So, I like, it just seemed like a because it was kind of terrifying the first, of, like, I don't
was
know, the
it
bureaucracy.
Terror or was it PTSD?
Well, that is kind of, but the thought of, like, you're being put into this thing that is just so clearly bureaucratic, but you have no idea of how it's supposed to work. You know it's going to affect you in some weird way, and you have literally no power to get out of it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I like that, like, he saw that and he paid attention, and then that's how he's able to be like, no, I know exactly how this is gonna go.
Mm-hmm. So another thing I wanted to talk about was the fact that, like, well, there's no heroes and no glory in this arc, or in any of them, really. That's a continued theme. That the people, like, you know, the prisoners, no one prisoner is the reason we fully succeeded. Like, yeah, okay, we needed Cassian, and we also needed Kino.
Do you know what that is? Because when we rise, we all rise together.
Right, that's exactly the whole point, is like...
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say, like, maybe Cassian pushed everyone, but, like, Melshi seemed to already have the idea.
Yeah, and it was already Burnock's ideal. It was his plan originally. Him and Melshi were working on it.
Yeah.
Cassian came in, and...
Cassian had to convince Kino, because he told Kino, like, this isn't going to work unless you say it. Like,
yeah.
You have
the
ability.
Kino had to be the one to...
Yeah.
But, like... It still could have failed if everyone didn't do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If one person had tried to, you know, win some points by, you know.
I do love that shot of they're all running down the hallway.
Yes.
And the guards
are all hiding
in that one, like,
yes.
closet.
I love that. love that so much. But another thing with that, the no heroes, no glory kind of thing is another example is, like, Luthen and the Spy.
Yeah.
That, like, neither of them are, you know, they might both be doing heroic actions. Well, even Luthen says, we need all the heroes we can get. You're a hero kind of thing.
Yeah.
But he's not. Like, the Spy isn't. He is doing good work, but I don't know. You get the ideal of hero as being, like, you know, known and talked about, and this person alone is saving the world.
Well, yeah. I mean, I feel like that's kind of the thing with Mon and Vel as well, is, like, they're doing all this stuff, like, for the rebellion, but, like, no one knows about it. Like, the whole point is Zaman's so freaked out that someone might find out. And Vel did in Dali, and Mon doesn't even know that. But, I mean, I feel like this is going back to the whole thing of, like, Rogue One is, what is, it's like, a sentence in the first scroll.
Yeah.
Like, and that's, like, basically what we're building to, and it's this whole, like, heroic thing, and no one knew really anything about it until we made that movie, like.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, like, it's not, like, you know, it's not, like, you know...
It's not Luke blowing up the Death Star.
But it's not even, like, Luke and Leia, like, talking about it. No, it's not, like, some, like, any of the lore that, like, Finn and Rey know and talk about. Like, no one even knows about this mission, really.
It's not even about blowing up the Death Star 2, where Mon Mothma gets a speech where so many Bothas died. That was the Death Star 2. This is a Death Star 1 that they get the plans for.
Yeah.
But, no, because, like, anytime I talk with... That's another thing. Anyone I talk to about the show, it's like, Rogue One was my favorite Star Wars show. You know, because it's not about the Force users or anything. It's about the everyday man. And the fact that then they're like, I haven't had the time to watch Andor yet. Just watch it.
Yeah, I know. I've had a lot of people like that.
No. Rogue One's my favorite. It's like, if Rogue One's your favorite, you are going to love this show. Rogue One isn't your favorite, you're going to love this show.
Well,
if you started Rogue One.
The Mandalorian is fun. Like, it's cutesy. It's so, like, we read a lot into it.
Talking big about it, and then Grogu showed up.
Well, no, I mean, I still, like, but, like, it... It's fun. Like, it's not Andor. We talked about Andor is like a political drama. Like, The Mandalorian is a fun Star Wars show that
it's
has an adorable
adventure.
Baby. And
it's a Star Wars Western.
Yeah, it's Pedro Pascal being a dad in space. But, like, and then you have, like, the next level after that is Boba Fett, which is, like, we just got kind of silly and kind of bad.
Yeah.
And so I get people then being like, I'm not going to watch Andor. Like, it's just another Star Wars show. Like, I can see why people may not. I feel like a lot of people are watching. At least enough stuff has come out
enough
of people being like, it's good, actually.
It's getting critical acclaim, and it's being watched.
Yeah.
But it is not, it is still the lowest watched of, like, I mean, even Kenobi is above.
Oh, I completely even forgot about Kenobi.
Yeah. Which wasn't very good. It was
Kenobi.
Fine.
No,
it was fine. Like, I mean, it was nothing. It was kind of Book of Boba Fett level. Like, it was fine. I watched it. There were some moments. There were some interesting characters, and that was about it.
Nothing was as bad as Bad Batch, though. I can't believe you're still watching, Corp. What the fuck?
I can't.
Anytime you text me about Bad Batch, I'm like, why are you watching this?
I can't not!
Wait, you mean you don't just sit there and disassociate like me?
I can't not watch it. Like, oh my god.
Hey.
It's like...
Don't worry. Echo's with Rex now.
That's what I was saying, right?
Yeah,
that's... I was like, this continued of, like... First of all, why didn't they just make this, like, a sequel of the Clone Wars? Like, why didn't they
just... Just feel like what people would want.
Because the Clone Wars never the was...
Clone Wars has its own fan base within Star Wars.
Right,
yeah.
That's what I mean. But also, like, that's what they wanted to do, was a sequel to Clone Wars. But they focused too centrally on one group. And that's never what Clone Wars was. Yeah. Like, yeah, technically, Anakin and Ahsoka were probably what you would say are the most main characters, but there are episodes where they're not in there.
Characters in Clone Wars. Like, yeah. I could probably name, like, 15 right now.
Right. There are arcs where the main Jedi characters aren't in it at all.
Doesn't have our main Jedi characters. Anakin makes an appearance in Umbaria.
Right. Anakin leaves Umbaria. And, like, they seem to have been doing that. Like, the good episodes of this season, there was, like, one about, like, Cody deciding that he couldn't be a part of it anymore and trying to get Crosshair to leave, and Crosshair not as still being too involved in it. And, like, this one, there was a whole episode in this, like, two-episode arc they put where none of the Bad Batch was in it at all. It was just, like, some random clones and a senator, and then that build up to, like, Rex being there at the very end. And I was like, this is a great episode. Why didn't we just...
That does sound better. Like, we didn't have to deal with, like, Omega, like, running into traffic or something.
Like, why didn't we just do this? And even, like, you could still make the Bad Batch be more of a central one, but, like, be one of the central main groups we switch back to.
Yeah.
But the Clone Wars, there were episodes with Maul and stuff where no one else was in. Like, there were episodes everyone loved the Maul episode. Shut your mouth. But I mean, like, there was like a 5-episode arc that was only droids. It was terrible. But it was there. Like, you can do, it was so, it seems like that's what they want to be doing too, because they keep moving to other characters and other plot lines. It's very bizarre. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Back to
we're
the
not
good
going
show.
On tangents. Yes.
Tangents, who that?
Yeah, but anyway, with Luthen and the Spy, that's even like...
Is that his band?
Luthen and the Spy. That Luthen is a good...
Yeah, it's like band, Josie and Pussycats. Yeah. It's Luthen and...
but anyway, one of the things... Wait. Oh, Luthen's whole speech. I love Luthen's whole speech.
What is the difference? Burping like that scene Lord of the Rings when Pippin and Merry drink the water and then they start burping and they start grunting. Anyway.
Lego, by the way.
What was I saying? Oh, well, Luthen's speech. What is the difference between the Separatists and the Rebellion?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So the Separatists are the bad guys.
You're gonna have to explain this to me in like
the battle
terms.
Droid side of the Clone Wars. So there was the Republic, the Clone Wars.
The Separatists are the people who don't want to be part of like some grand council.
But like what? Okay, so during that time, so the Republic was fighting.
Palpatine.
Yeah, during the Clone Wars in the show, like that time period.
Corp, we didn't. If you explained it to me in Republic Commando terms, that would almost be easier.
That's fine. So in Republic Commandos, everyone they're fighting, they're fighting the Separatists.
Okay.
The Separatists are the other side of that war.
But are technically both sides controlled by Palpatine?
Yes.
Yes, but no one knew it at that point.
No one knew it at the time. Okay.
Yeah. So they were like kind of, so the Separatists had like, he was trying to cause shit in the, he basically wanted to force the hypocrisy of how evil and bad the Jedi were. That they would just do anything if they thought it was for the Republic.
Okay.
So
for the Republic.
Yes. Exactly. So that's why he had this whole ideal of like, let's, that was the whole idea with like, well, technically his master did, but anyway, the Sith were like, so let's have them make a whole slave army.
Okay.
And then the clones. So they had like a rogue Jedi.
Look at how good
do
we
that.
Are. We're using droids. They're not people. They have no rights.
They wanted to do that. So let's make all of these, the clones, secretly, and then have the Jedi just stumble upon them right as this war that we've started is starting, and let's see them not use them. So basically, they wanted to say, look at how shitty the Jedi are. Now they're in charge of this whole army of slaves that they're suddenly okay with, even though they said they didn't want an army, and that they're fighting these people, and they're using droids. So, like, there's no one dying on that side. Okay. But they're killing these people, and they're just using them as droids.
Okay.
So it was kind of Palpatine's whole ideal to, like, all the Sith's ideal to say, look at how wrong and bad the Jedi are. They're evil, too. And basically, they wanted to expose the Jedi for being shitty.
Okay.
So
what is, like, I know you mentioned this at some point. What would be the implications of Luthen being a Separatist spy? Like, what would that really mean in terms of, like, what Cassian networks and, like, Leia eventually
are I think for? It would honestly be more in line with his ideals now, like, his ideology now.
Okay.
Because basically, like, Saul was a separatist.
Okay.
And his, well, he was, like, a kind of a separatist. No, he was, like, a rebel. It was confusing. He wasn't with the Empire. Separatists had taken over his home world.
Okay.
And they had started their own grassroots rebellion against the Separatists taking over.
But okay. Was it real grassroots or astroturf?
It was real grassroots. And then the Jedi didn't want to get involved because technically that planet wasn't a Republic planet.
Okay.
So they couldn't get involved, but they did anyway. So basically they gave them like weapons and training and I mean a lot of like shit like America did. pretty much to overthrow them.
Okay.
And so like Ahsoka and Rex and Anakin were kind of involved in that, overthrowing that. During that time, the Separatists killed his sister, who was the leader of the group. And he continued to kind of have control-ish mm-hmm. and just kind of continued to always rebel against something and became kind of an extremist after that whole event.
Okay.
So that's where, like, Saul, that's why he was so pissed at the ideal of Krieger being a Separatist. Because the Separatists killed his sister and took over his world and ruined his whole life, kind of.
Okay.
So that's why, like, that is, but the Separatists were pretty much just like, we think that the Republic is overpowered and not actually helping,
mm-hmm.
and we would rather just be our own government. And the okay. Republic said, no, fuck you. We're going to kill you. And pretty much.
Okay. So wait, are we the Empire, the Republic, then the Separatists?
The Republic then became the Empire. There okay. were Separatist planets that just wanted to leave.
Okay.
Because they didn't like what was going on in the Republic. It wasn't getting anything done. They were, like, prioritizing the corporations that were involved in it.
Okay.
And so they just wanted to leave and do their own little government in their own systems. And the Republic was like, no, you got to be a part of our system still.
Mm-hmm.
And then Palpatine and Plagueis was like, yeah, let's keep shoving people out and let's start a civil war.
Okay.
So they continue to shove people out. And then kind of work that war to their advantage.
Okay.
So the Separatists were pretty much the ones that were seeing how bad the Republic was getting and mm-hmm. wanted out. And then the Republic was like, no, fuck you.
So I guess basically in the timeline we're currently in Andor, there's not all that much difference between the Separatists and the Rebellion?
No, not really.
Okay, because we're all just fighting the Empire.
Yeah.
Okay.
It would basically be that, like, even people who were for the Republic in the war, but realized, like, they would also work with the Separatists to overthrow. A lot of the Separatists became the Rebellion because they were pretty much doing the same thing.
Okay.
Like, it's just that now it became the Empire, and the Empire pushed even more people out that were actually trying with the Republic into the Separatist Rebellion.
Not to quote a very popular show right now, but, like, you know, and thanks to governments, all Nazis. The government is all Nazis.
Yes.
Yeah, but not then.
Yeah, pretty much. It was like, I mean, Palpatine had already taken over almost full control of everything.
Okay.
So it was going, basically.
I just didn't know if him being like a, because it comes up somewhere where, well, I think it's when
Saul
is
like. It would make more sense
like,
of him being wanting
like,
to
are
be.
Are you a separatist? And I was like, is that like a that big of a thing, or is it kind of like a... Saul seems like he's very, like, there are very clear lines, but I guess everyone else is like, no, we can blur the lines because we're basically all fighting for the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's basically, yeah.
Okay.
Basically, Saul is just really has a personal vendetta against the Separatists.
Because of his... Because
they happen to be the ones that oppressed his world when the Empire and the Republic were oppressing plenty of other worlds.
Okay.
As we saw in the early part of the show with Andor's home planet.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of where that line is. It's like, so I think it would fit with Luthen being kind of anti-establishment or seeing, like, the bad of the government early. I think it would make sense that he would be a separatist.
Okay.
It is interesting for him to be on Coruscant, though, because that was always the Republic and the Empire. We also have with that whole no heroes, no glory kind of ideal is Bix and Pac.
Yes.
They both were doing very, very minor rebellious acts.
Yeah.
And really weren't doing shit. It didn't matter. They still got arrested and tortured and, you know.
I guess I do love, with Deirdre and Bix,
mm-hmm.
of, Because it's basically, like, she made a phone call. And really, she was just trying to figure out where Cassian is. And it seems like even with her relation with Luthen, it was more just, like
it was more illegal smuggling.
Yeah, it wasn't anything rebellion-related. No. Like, for Luthen it was, but Bix didn't really know that. And obviously Cassian didn't at first.
Yeah.
So, but I like the fact that, like, Deirdre's blowing out of proportion what she's actually done. And then I think it's at one point where Bix is like, it doesn't matter what I tell you, you're not going to believe me.
She's like, yeah, you're probably right.
And then,
I love that whole torture scene, how much of that is the shift of, no, Deirdre isn't, like, because you've spent the early part kind of having some sympathy for her.
Yeah, but, like, we talked about this before, she's
relatable. The struggle most people can relate to of this whole, corporate situation, and then even more of, like, AFAB people of, like, trying to, like, prove yourself in the system where you don't. They don't truly see you as serious.
Well, yeah, she's like a younger woman, so she's like not so fucking Qyburn from Game of Thrones is fucking listening to her,
mm-hmm.
and like and everyone thinks she's like frivolous and like
everything or too ambitious.
Yeah,
she just needs to calm down.
Yeah. Yeah, and then she's being stalked by this incel, mm-hmm. and no, you know, so it's like okay, because at the one point I think it's so good with this scene, like the one Cyril's waiting outside. And he's just like, well, I know you work here, so I've waited for you. And she's like, you were waiting for me outside of my work? She's like, you know, I could have you arrested for this, right?
Yeah.
Like, so with that, it's like, yeah, she is, like, sympathetic. But then that's just, like, such the turn to Rebecca is being like, why the fuck does it matter? You cop, have already decided I committed this crime. And she's like, yeah, I have. Now we're going to torture you in this terrible way.
Yeah.
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 She tells her, like, the one guy with, what is it, Green Dad? Pox?
Yeah.
Well, he's like in there and been tortured, and the guy's
like stage it.
The guy's like, "Do you want me to take him away?" And she's like, "No, no, I want her to see him." And then they bring her in, and then she turns to that guy, and she's like, "What is he still doing here? Take him out!"
Yeah,
and he's like, "What?" Like, oh, it's so manipulative.
It's so good. Like
super
the whole torture scene is so wonderfully horrible. And like, I mean, we were talking about it earlier too, but the whole, I mean, first of all, the casting of that guy. Perfect.
Yes.
The torture doctor.
He is literally...
I think that's his role.
No, but I feel like he has the same thing Dr. Fairshing does, but he's actually fucking terrifying.
Yes.
Because
yes.
Dr. Fairshing is like, he's too cute, but then he's also nice and he's actually a good guy. This guy, he's a bit too cute and he's too much of a dork, but he's actually fucking terrifying.
Yes. Yeah,
so like, it's like the perfect of like, he's like Dr. Fairshing, but actually evil.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I love, like, the casual way he's just, like, talking about it.
He's, like excited about how they were able to figure out, like
this
science.
Oh, this is so interesting. And, and...
Like, we think it's children. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
And he's just like, we're going to torture you with it.
Yeah. It's like, oh, it's... I mean, I know we talked about this somewhat, Lee, when we were watching, like, The Last of Us, but with the clicker episode, is that whole idea of how they really did the perfect monster setup to build suspense for a monster.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we think everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But we see something that's been killed by the monster and we say, what did that?
Yeah.
And then slowly we start to hear, but we can't see the monster. And we're hiding from. So like, I feel like in a very serious way, they use that same kind of technique for that with the sound.
Well, that's the perfect thing of like, that's a very like common horror trope of like, don't actually show the monster because what
the jaws don't show the shark. Whatever someone can imagine is more terrifying than what you can show.
And it's a then it becomes personal for each single person and what they think is the most terrible thing, which is like why and what Brett was saying like the actress who plays Bix is a fucking fantastic
oh my
of looking
God,
like
yes.
it's the most horrible thing ever.
Yeah.
And so I love that they don't. Because one, it's like, what noise are they going to make? Like, they can't make that noise, technically.
Right.
But the fact that
then it's going to be like, oh, that's
leave
stupid.
It to your imagination.
Yeah, no.
Physically having it, just like...
Yeah, so living into your imagination is so much better. Also, just because you brought it up, did you see the fucking trash fucking Ben Shapiro tweet about The Last of Us?
Yes.
About how it's not good horror because, like, they had two guys meet in the apocalypse and they didn't even get killed by zombies.
Yeah.
And there were no zombies in this episode. I was like, oh my God, yes.
I
that's like
the horror show.
Save it for the bonus episode because we're obviously going to do one of the, you know how we did it, one for Prospects. We'll do a Pedro episode just about The Last of Us.
Dude, we could do an episode on every single episode.
I know, but we're a Mandalorian podcast.
Anyway, but another whole overall theme, I feel like, is that only people united can win.
I thought it was hands.
I was literally...
Like, hands is going to be... Hands is in a...
Are we coming about climbing in hands? Because I was going to bring that
up. Well, we do need... Well, I mean, the climbing
What are hands
has,
good for climbing, obviously?
No, the hand... I really... That is a common media movie thing of hands meaning
it's
power.
Okay, but what was the exact...
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but what... Is it okay if we just transition to
hands?
Yeah,
turn hands,
yeah. So, what was
that
it...
That fits with the United We Win, hands, hands, communist
yeah,
kind
but
of...
Yeah, but what was it that Skeen said about, like, climbing out of the pit?
Oh, yeah, it's like, you're like me, like, the only way we... Get, I think it's like...
The only way
we... start in the pit, and the only way we get out is climbing over others.
The fucking prison floors.
Yeah.
It's like literally, it looks like a pit, and then they have to climb up to the top. Like,
yes.
I was literally there. I was
the
like,
climbing.
Oh my god, Cork's hand theory is right.
The climbing.
Well, I and then really... and then they're hanging on the rocket after him and Melshi get it, and he's there.
Yes.
And he's like, I can't feel my hands.
I can't feel my hands. He doesn't say I can't hold on. He says I can't feel my hands.
Yeah.
And I love that was one. I have like a whole thing of like just like moments that stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of them is the. The him and Melshi on the wall, and not just because I ship them very hard.
Oh well, they're them. When he's like, they're leaving. He's like, stop saying that. And then when they get to the end, and he's like, tell me they're leaving. He's like, they're leaving. I was like, then I was like, oh, I ship you. I was like, oh, now Kia.
That is so good.
Well, maybe stop hanging because Melshi can't feel his hands. But once you get up, Kia,
it's so good. Like that whole exchange, I love so much. I love this. I like. The ideal that, like, they're both so fucked up. Like, their hands,
oh,
their
God,
feet
their hands
are
and
so
their feet.
Fucked up.
Yeah, they look so bad.
And,
yeah, get on the makeup department. That was gross looking.
Yeah. And he has that whole, like, you know, he's like, I can't feel my hands. He's like, they're leaving, you know. He's like, I can't feel my hands. He's like, I hear you. It doesn't say anything
yeah.
else, but he just says, like, I hear you. I understand. And, yeah, I love that. That whole idea of, like, no, like, I hate it, but I need you to tell me again that I'm going to be able to. That I shouldn't just let go right now.
Yeah.
But if you think of the hands as like, you know, like power and
yeah.
the ideal of taking back power, like,
yeah,
that's a whole nice ideal there of like, I'm losing the hope of it. Like,
yeah.
I can't do it anymore. I've tried.
Yeah, that's
like
the only
no.
power they have in that moment is their ability to hang on to this rock until the ship flies away.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Until they get down and realize that the aliens actually want to help them.
Yeah. And again, that's like a whole other thing of like, they could have not helped them. Like, they could, because they did say that, like, there was rewards for them. And they even say something like hunting has been more fishing has been more profitable on land recently, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Which hopefully makes it seem like maybe some other people made it out of the water.
Yeah.
Like, I noticed that, because they do say something along those lines.
Yeah. Well, I feel like so many people, they said it was, they had to get up to level 8. So I was like, did they jump 8 stories into water? Like,
I think it would probably be about 1 to 2 stories out of the water. Because remember, they were below the water line.
Oh, that's true. Okay,
so the floors were below, and then there was that top floor where.
Oh, okay.
But it was like a ship.
But it seemed like a very long jump.
Yeah, it was
like,
probably.
You're not that great of a swimmer. You do that. You just got pushed, let's say. Because, like, even Kelsey and Melissa just got pushed. You get pushed into water. And
or
then,
let's even say you are a good swimmer, but you fall in and someone falls on top of you.
Yeah, so you're basically...
And then you're down and you
can't
find up.
You're basically been mosh pitted into a water, and then, like... Also, you're wearing clothes, like, that look like they're paper, so maybe they just fucking...
Yeah,
fucking
dissolve.
Fold off, but,
yeah.
Like, So, yeah, but the thought of, like... I don't know, it just felt like a very, like... Like, Alcatraz-type thing of, like...
Very.
And, like, the couple of escapes that worked, it's like, oh, they got out, but, like... Like
but no one ever knows if they actually survived.
Yeah,
or
because
not.
Like the
they probably died in the water, but no one ever found their bodies.
Yeah, because like the probability of them making to land was such a stretch. Like
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but even that, they have to decide. Like, no, it's better if we help you. So they decide to help them.
Yeah.
But like that's that whole thing of like the only way that any of this works ever is if everyone decides to do it.
Yeah.
Like, one or two people not going with the plan fails.
I mean, that's
like,
what happens with the finale on Ferris. It's just, like, it's
everyone.
Everyone
has
yeah.
to, yeah. So, that's a continued thing from... And also, I think you could argue that's why Alani didn't go great. That everyone wasn't fully in it. Like, they were in
Aldani.
It. What?
Alani.
You said Alani like you did last
Damn
time.
Damn it. I just really like Alani energy drinks.
No,
and as
like
I said, I'm lost
Alani.
When Alani, one of my favorite people in 90 Day Fiancé.
Are you like Alani, our Donnie mommy sis?
Yes. Yeah, but that was a continued. Also, this kind of goes in with the no heroes, no glory, but that in this world, like, in all of Andor, that sacrifices aren't sacred. That there's no, like, holding up a martyr for any of these people that die. Like, Kino just can't swim. Yeah. And we don't actually see him die, even.
And Barak just gets killed so early.
Barak gets killed right away.
You don't even really think about it.
I think it's actually in the next episode, but Pock gets hanged off screen. They just say, "I really want to hang him," and he's just like, "Okay."
I caught it this time.
Yeah, but
I knew based on the finale, like, the way his son reacts, like, obviously he got killed. But I was like, when in this... Because I was watching Daughters of Paris, and I was like, when in this trajectory does he get killed? And then I was like, oh, it's just this line, and then it must be off screen. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like the only person, even in a little bit, has kind of a martyr role, I guess, is Marva, but she literally just dies of old age.
Yeah.
Like, it's just she had all these beliefs, and it's more that they fuck up her funeral that makes everyone so mad. Like,
yeah. And, like... Even, like, the rebels, like, you know, Krieger's rebels, they're not warned. And, again, we don't see them die on screen. We just hear that they die. Yeah. Same with the pilot. We just hear them casually talk about him.
I mean, even, like, Terriman dies so quick. Mm-hmm. Does Gorn get killed? I don't even...
Yeah, I believe Gorn gets killed,
Yeah, too. But so, like, yeah. So, like, they'll kill quick. Like, Nemec has, like, it's not even really a martyr thing. It's just, like, a sad ending to the mission.
Yeah.
That, like, it just, like, now, like, the hope of why we were doing this is gone. Like,
ugh. Yeah. And, like, Mon, like, decides to kind of sacrifice her morals, but not really. And then in doing that, like, Clita, like, just kind of, you know, she just kind of, like, goes back on her whole family. And it's not a good thing, but it's... also not a bad thing. And Clita, like, agrees, but doesn't probably understand that she's really sacrificing her whole future for something that is so disconnected from her.
I do love that, like, it's the same when Vel walks in as, like, the gay cousin. And, like, what the fuck is this? Not straight nonsense. Where Vel initially, because it was previously before that, there was the appearance, like, well, you have to get married, you're fucking too old. Uh-huh. Like, no man's gonna watch you in a couple of years. And then she comes in and Vel's just like, well, this has gotta be Perrin, right?
Yeah.
And Mon's like, no, this is one of the few things we actually agree on. Like, this is Cletus.
Yeah,
thing.
No, he's surprisingly, like, yeah, he's surprisingly open-minded about this or something.
Yeah, so, and then even Vel's like, wait, what? Like, what? So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, no, Clita wants to do it herself.
So I love that last shot of the two of them kind of behind her, and they both look up, which is like, maybe the first time we've ever seen them agree literally on anything.
Yeah.
Is that, like, we don't want to be doing this. But, like,
but neither of them are going to talk to the other about why they don't want to be doing it. That
because
it's
like,
well
I feel like Perrin is just going to support that Clita does, and in a way, Mon will too, but Mon also kind of needs this to continue funding the rebellion. So, yeah, and it's, oh, and it's her weird, like, I love the moral gray area of it with her, because, like, it is, she is using her daughter as a pawn, but it's also something her daughter wants.
Right.
But, like, she doesn't support it, but she know her daughter wants it.
But so is her daughter, yeah, like, is, did Mon want it when she got into her marriage? Maybe.
Or maybe
she
didn't.
It seemed like her and Perrin were at least friends.
Yeah.
Or wasn't opposed to it necessarily.
Was she wanted, or was she like, okay, yeah, I don't hate him.
Right, like, that's what I mean, is, like,
well, yeah,
she was definitely at least willing enough to go along with the tradition.
Well, because it seems like her, Perrin, and Tay were all friends, at least.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, like, so much... all the sacrifices that we see throughout the whole series is just, like, very... they happen. They're important. But they're not, like, idealized. Like, we're not... you know what I mean? We're not striving to be the martyr.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then just to, like... some of the moments that really, like, stuck out with me. The prisoner sorting at the very beginning, that was just poignant as someone who's been arrested.
And then put on a bus, yeah.
Yeah, that was just very real and, like, oh. Also, they did that same thing that they really like to do, and I very much enjoy it in those situations, is that pure focus on one character's face.
Yeah.
In those situations. That we're just staring at the person, like, we're just watching it happen.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I feel, I mean, if I mentioned it earlier, it is kind of a PTSD thing, I think, of why I liked the
arrest onto the buses to, like, where the fuck are you even taking me? Like, in the just pure not being acknowledged as, like, people. Like,
yeah.
No one's explaining it. No one's saying, oh, you're going to Narcona 5. It is this prison there to serve your sentence. They just say, Narcona 5. You say, "What? Where is that? What is that?"
Well, I mean,
go, hurry up, get off.
And even, like, the way he was, I mean, technically, we were never really even officially arrested, because we were not told what we were being charged with.
Well, I was.
Oh, well, I guess once you got inside?
Yeah, I was fully arrested.
Were you told what you were being charged with?
My lawyer told me.
But when did you see a lawyer?
I mean, it wasn't until I got
released.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the point. When you're arrested, you're supposed to be being told what you're being charged with.
Yeah.
We were not told that. I was never told. I was handed a paper and then told I could go. Like,
I think I got charged with, I think it was...
I was charged with misconduct during an emergency, which was a misdemeanor 4.
See, I think I was charged
with... You were charged with the misdemeanor 1, because I remember mom...
Yes. I was charged with disconduct during an emergency, misdemeanor 1.
Which
they would have had to prove that I was inciting and committing violence, which I wasn't at all.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. You've never listened to any of
I didn't even throw a water bottle.
Have you listened to any of her Marie Commune May episodes, which we do, is because we, Quick and I both got arrested on my 29th birthday.
Yeah.
Which was May 31st, 2020. Yeah. A couple of days after
summer.
George Floyd was murdered.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were... Both of us, for literally being out past curfew.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was arrested, put onto buses, then taken to the jail. Quirk went inside, I was kept in a parking lot the entire time, and then given a paper and released.
Yeah, so I got to stay for a nice extra, like, 12 hours.
Till I passed when I posted bail at, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah, 8 hours after you posted bail. Yeah, because they kind of process it.
Yeah,
it was great. A good time. But yeah, I mean, it felt really, I mean, that whole situation there felt really real.
Yeah, because it just...
His blankness, too, also felt pretty real.
That's why I was fully complete with him just disassociating. Like,
yes.
We were handcuffed in that parking lot for 13 hours, like,
yeah,
or at least I was.
Right.
Well,
I was there the whole time.
Well, yeah. Okay, it was 13 hours from when we got arrested.
Probably
to when
got arrested.
I got released,
I mean, we were in the parking lot, I think, for about 7 of that.
Yeah.
So we were on the piss bus for like 4 hours or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
also the, I mean, from my own, you know, perspective of everything, I really love the med tech, the guy, the like little, the EMT-ass guy that comes and treats Olaf.
Talking about the EMTS guy?
Yeah, so the med tech. I'm just such a fan of it.
Like, I really liked that he was also a prisoner. We're not even getting outside medical care. We're just doing a prisoner who also has medical training.
Yes. And that he just... he was too real. And like, okay, there are a lot of people, especially I work private. I work on a private ambulance. And if you're not from America, basically our... I work on an ambulance... that makes money, and that is main thing is to make money. So you can tell that there are definitely no systemic problems with that. It's all good. Always.
No, capitalism is fine.
Yeah, no, perfect system.
Definitely ethical consumption.
Absolutely ethical. No problems there. So a lot of people, especially like the career private people, are very, even in a very different way than like public EMTs, are very burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of that, like, everything is so, you know, he says that whole, like, hey, buddy, like, can you, you know, I think he does say buddy or something, like,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, or brother or something, try to look at me, and they're like, his name's Olaf, and he's like, I don't care what his name is, I don't need to know.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, but, and like, he's like, his name is Olaf, and he's like, okay, like, I don't want to know.
Yeah.
But like, and especially for this guy specifically, because clearly he's probably been doing this for a hot second. Because he says things are about to get a lot worse.
Yeah.
To Kino, it seems like they've known each other for a while. So you can assume
that...
Yeah,
at least they're
close
been
to
there
the
for
same
a while,
age,
like,
too.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You can assume that they kind of came in closest to around the same
time.
And, you know, he ends up, like, saying, like, oh, yeah, he's had a massive stroke.
Yeah.
And just, like, pretty much euthanizes him.
I love how matter-of-factly it all is, because he's just, like, talking to them in a very matter-of-fact way, and he's just very quickly... grabbing all of the tools, and to the point where, like, Kino and Cassian don't even realize what he's doing until, like, after... Until he's, like, literally about to be like, no, I'm euthanizing him. And then it's just like, boom, and then just hits it. And they're just
another week like this, and you will be asking for...
And then, well, because I think even for a moment, Cassian's like, no. And he's like, no, this is what you want for him. This is the best thing that I could do for him. This is the best thing I can literally do for anyone right now.
I mean,
like,
he's had a stroke. He's...
Well, yeah, and him almost being like, no, him dying and not having to face what's coming is actually better. Like,
yeah, but that too, that whole like, oh, let me just, you know, I'm just doing my thing. I'm just, especially if what your thing is at least a certain amount of time euthanizing people.
Yeah.
There's going to be this, you want to disconnect from it.
Well, especially because you think like, this is not a type of poison that has like a med wing.
No. He opened that pack and there was his little oxygen masks.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the euthanasia tablets, and that was it.
Yeah.
So like, that's what you're getting.
We're not doing end of life care at this fucking prison. No, you can't work.
You're not really like, getting shit. Like, I bet if you break a finger, they might splint it and say you're gonna be back on the floor.
Oh yeah.
Like that's gonna be it. Yeah.
Well, that was even the when Olaf had that stroke, he nearly collapsed at the table. And the whole, like, everyone else at the table was trying to hide it.
Yeah.
And then they were basically almost carrying him through, like, the little tunnel back because they're like, we don't want anyone to know he can't stand.
Yeah.
Because they were just worried about what would happen. Like,
Yeah, I don't know. That character really, really stuck with me. Because it's kind of like what I do in my life. Well, not like what I do in my life. But, like, I got what he was coming from. I know a lot of people were like, he was such a dick. I was like, I mean, but I get where he's coming from. Yeah. Like, can you imagine, like, right, because it probably was seen as some kind of extra thing, you know.
Yeah.
Let us, either you had some medical past,
mm-hmm.
and you can do this thing instead of being on the floor,
yeah.
or we'll give you a tiny bit of training and you'll be a medical thing.
Oh, interesting, yeah. I just assumed he might have been... like a doctor or a medic or something before he had been arrested.
Right. But like either way, so it was probably seen as a slightly elevated position from
And I'm sure
he gets flavor in his food.
Right. Like he doesn't have to.
That's such a gross thing.
I know.
Flavor tubes.
But he doesn't have to do the manual labor.
Yeah.
You know, he isn't stuck on one floor. You know, it's probably a little bit more interesting, a little bit easier for the time to pass if you're walking to place to place. And
yeah.
Yeah, so it seems like some kind of almost privilege, but then it's also like, but what you're actually doing isn't what you thought you were going to be doing. And like...
Oh, that's such a weird thought thing. I hadn't thought of this prison. There must be some other floor where it's like, they keep like the med tech and like the janitors. And, like, the guys who like clean the guns and shit. Like,
probably even like... programmers and tradesmen.
Right, I would say they do I mean, that's how American prisons work, is they're almost completely run by the prisoners.
Yeah.
They're usually the janitorial staff, they're the kitchen staff, the cooks. Yeah. They're the people that run almost everything in the prison.
Again, listening to Reddit, I know for a fact that, like, kitchen staff is highly sought after because it has perks.
Yeah, because it's nice. Well, everyone
remember
likes
that's
cooking
when
for food.
Were you still outside doing breakfast at the jail?
Yeah.
Yeah, remember when we were all trying to be nice and, like, clean up our trash, and then we realized, like, wait, they're on lockdown inside the prison, and it was, like, a prisoner who was able to, like, be out there and, like, wait, we shouldn't be helping and cleaning up our food, we should leave it everywhere so this guy can spend more time outside and not locked in his cell inside.
Yeah.
And we're like, fuck, we all realize this too late. We were trying to be, like, Midwest nice about it, and we're like, fuck, no, we actually should have been messy as hell, and then he'd get to spend more time outside.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, ah, damn it.
Yeah, but, right, so... all we ever see of the staff are guards. That's all we ever see.
Yeah.
And we see the guys manning the controls.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of them, I love the voice we hear the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the, like,
the weird
modulated, deep voice.
Yeah.
And then we see the guy, and he's this wimpy little dork.
Yes.
And it's all, like, a voice filter.
Yeah, I like that when Kino does get on it to it, that, like, that's...
he turned off the filter or whatever?
No, he didn't. It still was, like, a weird modulized...
oh, yeah, I guess it was a little bit.
But it was just very weird to think of, like, oh, right. Because it just sounded kind of like a robotic voice. But then it gets on there, and it's fucking Andy Serkis and, like, anyone, you know...
yeah, who's...
you know, older than, like, seven, knows who the fuck he is. Because he's Smeagol. Like, so, yeah, it was a... yeah, but God, that guy was a total dork, too.
Yeah,
I love them up in the control room, and they're like, we can't turn off the hydro power. It could take months to turn back on. It's like... bitch, Cassian has has a gun to your head. Like
who? Yeah, he knows. He doesn't give two shits.
Yeah, like, yeah. What? I love when like he yells on program at them too.
Yes. Oh, so good.
And then the one does it instantly. The other one's like, no,
It's all
Let me see if there's any other. I kind of did just write my like main points, but I wrote them like episode by episode.
I mean, all of Kino. I loved Kino so much. I thought Kino was such an interesting character. Such a good, I mean, I don't know. I loved him. I loved the way it went through. Hating him at the beginning and his, that episode, I think, that was One Way Out. That one with, I feel like that one was the episode of the series loved.
That was the best.
I mean, except maybe Rick's Road. But,
yeah.
That was the best non-finale.
Yeah.
His whole speech to them, like,
ugh. I feel like the eye was, like, a turning point because of, like, it was so dramatic and then so many people got killed.
Yes.
And it was just like, oh, we're going to kill characters we've spent episodes with.
Yeah.
To the point, like, nobody died in The Mandalorian. Like, like we do love it, but, like they're not going to kill, Carl Weathers.
Grief Cargo.
Whose name is Grief. might have killed Kara off screen. Who knows? We'll find out.
I also was like... Let's just repeat Kara with Lux Pascal and not say anything.
Lux Pascal or Lucy Lawless. I'm fine with either. Just, yes. We'll place Kara with a queer icon. I'm fine.
What we see, though, with Kino and in his whole...
Oh, yeah, that's the point through. I was making, is that I felt like it was a turning point of, like, we can just kill fucking anyone. But then, yeah, the ones that felt like, oh, we are a main, like, this is what this show is. One Way Out did feel like the first episode of, like, oh, this is fully what this show is. Like, it was, like...
Yeah, it was it's the thesis perfect...
Well, like, kind of, like, the start of the paragraph, of the intro paragraph, and then the thesis statement at the end of that paragraph is Rick's Road. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because we had his whole speech of the... I mean, so much of his speech in the prison I love, you know, and he repeats Cassian's words back to him.
Yeah.
And the whole, like, ugh, I don't know why, but it always, like, ugh, it always makes me tear. The whole line where he's like, you know, all of us have to go together. If you see someone left behind, you know, like, grab them, help them, or confused, you know. And he says that thing is, like, if we fight half as hard as we've been working, we'll make it home in no time.
Yes.
Like, ah, I love it. I love it so much. And then that's the same episode where we have Luthen's whole speech.
Yeah.
And I love Luthen's speech, too, and the whole, like, the honesty of it, and the almost, though, like, unhinged manner of the way he says it. Like, you almost don't want to trust him in a weird way. Like, he comes off really aggressive.
Yeah.
It, but at the same time, it's, like, so good.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, the whole thing of, like, when he says, like, I can't remember it, but it's like, I'm something cursed to use the tools of my enemy to defeat them.
Yeah.
So much of it is so good of this ideal of like how much you truly have to give up if you really want to be what he's doing.
Yeah.
The ringleader, the, you know.
Yeah.
Or that like he's, that his ego started this fight and it will never see the end, like, you know, he burns everything for a sunrise I'll never see.
Yes.
There's so many lines in both of those speeches.
Which, that was such a good thing because we know this.
Yeah, the whole Rogue One.
Yeah, it's like, all building up to Cassian's death.
And
basically.
You're like, oh, God.
So Cassian never sees anything he's fighting for. Like,
and even then, the blast going off looks like a sunrise or a sunset.
Yeah.
At the very end. Like, it's so good. The key to in... We have such a clear point of where we're going and what we're telling with this story.
Yeah.
And I think that's what keeps it so good.
Yeah.
And we're willing to wait to make the point. Like, a good one of it, like, nobody's listening. That whole episode, we have Cassian asking, how many guards are there? I need your help. How many guards are there? Over again, he asks, how many guards are there on the floor? And Kino ignores him. And so then when he asks it again, and Kino finally says, after, like, never more than 12, it's so satisfying, and it's such a simple line. But they were willing to take that whole episode
To build up to
that. To build up to that significant point and why it mattered to get to that point.
Yeah, I feel like this is the thing of the one thing I had in my notes I wanted to mention is like, because I know I had brought this up in a previous episode of like, did everyone else on Ferrix think Marva had like dementia? And like, was, and so the stuff she was saying, because it was, I thought it was with,
what is it, Brasso?
Brasso. I was like, with Brasso and Bix of them being like, well, she's not gonna. Well, because Bex, I think, like Tony, like, well, she's not gonna leave. Like, you know, she's gonna, like, the rebel. Oh, she fell, yes, outside of the hotel because she was looking for the tunnel that she thought the rebellion was gonna use.
Yeah,
and Bex was kind of like a. And like, she kind of made a face, but I was like, oh god,
I should be stopping by more.
Or like, oh god, is she losing it or something? Yeah. And like, so I like that. Like everyone, like definitely the two of them, and maybe a little bit the other like daughters of Ferrix are kind of operating on the fact like, maybe she's lost it a bit.
Yeah.
But like, but in like, but it's the kind of thing of like, when the end doesn't matter, like, who cares? Yeah. Like, Jesus Christ, I keep getting emotional. This is a Star Wars show. this is a Fiona Shaw, so I just have so many other things. And I was just like, but, so of them being like, yeah, maybe she's remembering back to when she was really fully in her rebellion time, or maybe she's thinking about now. But at the end, it doesn't matter because, like... Because
it's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. And she was a separatist.
Okay.
She was a separatist.
But the thing is, like, and then that's all building, like, in, like, yeah, maybe... Because I like the thing of, like, they're never really serious about it. So, like, maybe she did have dementia this entire time. Maybe even that speech at the end is maybe she thought it was 15 years ago and she was, like, on, like, with Clem on some ship saving Cassian right off of some planet. Right. But in the end, it didn't matter because they're still fighting the same goddamn fucking thing. Like, it's so good. Like, I love.
Yeah. There's so much with and again, the unity and community that we can, that is continually a theme in the whole.
Oh god, look at him taking care of B.
Yes, and that we don't treat him like, you know,
he's Brasso, being part of the town. He's a member of the town.
Yeah, that Brasso doesn't treat him like a piece of property that is part of like.
No, they have equal standing at the funeral. Like,
yeah, in that, like, in that, you know, Brasso asks, you know, them, like, hey, are, you know, do you want to say goodbye to her? Are you ready? We're going to take her out soon.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, we can leave you alone if you want.
Yeah, like, and he says, like, that whole thing, like, oh, like, you know, you can't stay here by yourself. Marva wouldn't like that, you know? And he, like, agrees to stay there again for one more night. Like, I like that, like, people don't, like, oh, because we've always seen the droids have some kind of emotion. Yeah. Some kind of connection to
people. I feel like this is the first time where I feel like the droid is being treated like a child. Like a, or,
right, like,
or like a... Yeah, I guess, yeah, like a droid. Because I feel like I keep joking that they're somewhere between like a dog or like a... Mostly I think I make a joke of being like a dog. But right, we're not treating me like a dog. He's like... But he's not really a child either. Like, he is a droid. Like, yeah, and I feel like that's the first time. Like, this has been like a real... kind of representation of like, yeah, no, we're not Cassian, but we're also not a dog.
Yeah, right. Like, they're asking, you know, are you okay? Do you need help? But like, but it's not, yeah, it's very interesting. The idea that he does have feelings for her and that he did care about her.
Yeah.
And the like, fact that we're like, acknowledging and...
The fact that like a couple things might be like broken with him and that's why he like, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of that with it. Yeah, I mean, the whole Ferrix community is...
Yeah, it's so perfect. Yeah, it's so it's great, perfect. Which is also why, like, it's... Oh, it was also another thing I wanted to that stood out was... they were... God, was it two dudes? It was the ISB.
Yep, ISB.
Not the irritable bowel syndrome. I had to do that in my head. In my head, I was doing the one thing you translated it for with our Danish cousin-in-law, the explosive butt syndrome. when they was saying, like, with the funeral, and they were, like, how... It was something where, like, they were trying to explain, like, the
funeral, the practice.
Like, yeah, like, how they were going to be made into bricks, and they were, like, what? And the weird clinical, like, we don't know what we're talking about felt kind of the same of, like, the people in the Andali arc bragging about how they were destroying the Donnie's culture.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to be bricked, and, like, they're going to be fucking what?
Yeah, and like, turned into a brick. And someone was like, and then what happens? Someone was like, they find them a wall.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, it's very,
And they sounded, like, so dismissive about it, and it was just like,
Yeah.
But I like that we even had, like, but I like even with that, like, we hadn't really seen that process yet. We don't see that until the finale. So I like even before this, we almost see the bad guys, explain the practice of, like, the people we're supposed to like in a very dismissive way. And then we get to see it, which is kind of, like, the opposite of, like, we got to, well, I guess it's the same thing with Adani. We hadn't really seen them yet.
Yeah.
Like, we had heard about them from Gorn and from, kind of, like, the other people who were there for the Andali heist, but.
I do also think, though, like, even in their really dismissive, really clinical explanation of it, I still was like, oh, that's cool. That sounds interesting. Like, the way they even said
it. Yeah,
it
felt like a couple of them might being like, oh, yeah, that would be like an
yeah, they put it into a brick, and then they find a wall, and you're like, huh, okay. And also, like, the set, like, too, like, when you're looking at the set, then after they said that, you rethink of it, and like, yeah, the brickwork is really fucking cool.
Yeah.
So then you have this whole idea
it's
that, like,
super cool, especially in a religious aspect.
Yeah, and then you're thinking,
part
like,
of the town
in
life, part of the town in death.
Right, there's some kind of... Even the bricks that aren't, like, memorial bricks, the brickwork of all the buildings is really cool and interesting. So you kind of have this ideal of, like, oh, that means something here.
Yeah.
Like, this is not just putting in some, like, random house. Like, oh, the bricks are artwork and kind of, like, this art. Like the hotel has really cool brickwork, and it's, like, that weird circle shape, and the tower has all that cool brickwork in it. Yeah. Like, so you kind of see that, like, all the way through the culture. So even when they said that dismissively, I kind of got what Ferrix thought about it in a weird way.
Yeah.
From all the other foods. I love how much Ferrix is developed as a culture. Like,
detail.
Yeah, the level of detail in it is so good, which is, I feel like, I mean,
we lose some of it in the volume. There needs to be a like, that they built Ferrix. I think I sent it to you. I think I did. It was like an aerial photo of the lot that they had built Ferrix in.
Oh, I don't know if you did.
Oh, I have it. I think I have it saved somewhere. It's very interesting. And, like, you can kind of see, like, the main, like, Bricks Road and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So did they, they built it all out.
Oh, wow.
I guess so.
Damn, yeah, that looks like a whole fucking neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a cul-de-sac, Jesus. Texas and me, I'll put it on our social media with this episode. But I feel like, I'm not saying that it's, like, bad or it's anything that we've lost, but I feel like I like with this that we've built some of these sets, which I know, I don't think it looks bad on The Mandalorian, that it's, like, the
volume?
Is that what the...
Yeah, it's called the volume.
Okay. But a lot of, like, except for maybe Navarre, which we're not on all that often. Well, I feel like that was what was the good thing about them blowing up the Razor Crest, is, like, the Razor Crest was the one reoccurring setting we really had, or, like, the location. So I feel like we haven't gotten that from the... I'm just pulling the other Star Wars thing I've actually spent this much time thinking about. But, so I feel like I like that, like, we do have this set location that really feels like a full thing. It's, like, all we really got on Navarro, I guess, was Common House Spring. Like, but, like, even that, like... So it meant a little bit when we, like, it got destroyed at the end of the first season, and then kind of rebuilt into this Common House Boring School.
I guess the thing with Ferrix is that, like, we saw that picture I just showed you, and we'll put it up.
Yeah.
Is that it? We saw those places, and we see people just walking around the streets.
Yeah.
And everything, and it's that whole ideal of, like, I did see one of the, one of the directors or director of photography or someone was talking about one of the things they really liked to do when they were filming, and that was, like, because they did a lot on locations and in practical more than the volume or anything like that. And what they would do to really make it feel like Star Wars and to feel grounded is to literally start on someone's feet and move up into the...
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the best examples of that is Deidre walking into the ISB.
Yeah.
Remember, they started and then we move up and see the ISB.
Yeah.
So these, in, like, you know, we were talking about, like, the Coruscant, like, airport. And how it, like, it felt so real. But it was, like, a real place in, like, London or something. But how they were able to, like, take those places that were normal.
Like,
and
giving someone the full profile. They're giving this set the full profile.
Right. And when you put a person there in it, you just accept... Yeah, the Star Wars person is in it, so it's in Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a different perspective rather than, like, I think the volume is very good for a lot of things. And the main reason why they made it was because...
Well, I feel like they have a lot of, like, very expansive landscapes. Like, we were in, like, you know, Tatooine or, like, wherever the one little... The temple planet. Whoa, when he takes Grogu to the temple.
I can't remember what that's
called.
Morak somewhere. Where is that? I don't remember. Maybe that's the...
Yeah, but I feel like we have a lot of very big landscapes. But I feel like... The one thing I feel like I like about Ferrix is, like, it's the one, at least in, like, the Star Wars show, that it feels like we know this entire community.
Yes. We've been connected.
And even to the point of, like, even, like, you, like, Cinta is almost like we know she's basically a spy. But, like, she, unlike the, like, undercover cop at a music festival, like, she has made herself a part of the community to the point where, like, that she's, like, working at that one, like, cafe or that, like, bar across the street from Marva's house.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like that's the whole, like, she's integrated herself into the community to the point where, like, it really feels like she's, like, a real person there, too. Yes.
Yeah.
Which, like...
This guy that just sits around sometimes.
Yes, and he's, like, God, that he's always there, too. I find it so... Like, it was so... Like, obviously, it was, like, he was there, but knowing him, it's like, oh, you're literally just hanging out in the fucking bar that, like, sent us being like, oh, yeah, I just got here, like, a week ago, and I'm just, like, a fucking waitress in this bar that no one's looking at. Mm-hmm. And you're like, dude, you're clearly an Imperial. Like,
yeah, oh, my God, everyone recognizes that,
Yeah, no, he's, like,
Well, yeah, even they knew, like, I think at the very end, Brasso or someone says that, like, they've been watching Marva's Place.
Yeah.
Like, they already
knew.
Of course
they
know
that guy, but not Cinta. Like,
right, of course they knew. Because she okay, some random person probably running from some shit found, you know.
Some, like, fucking 25-year-old started, like, she
just
got here.
She's working as a barista.
Yeah, but God, he seems like a fucking, God, it was so funny in college all the time when we'd have
the fests.
Yeah, the fests. I went to Ohio University. We had a lot, and it was a party. Playboy ranked party school at the time. But, like, so we'd have all these basically, like, festivals where everyone would just be drinking on their streets. But so it was so funny. There was this one guy who was the fucking funniest. He was a black guy, so good on the Athens Police Department, I guess. He was clearly 45 years old. He had dreadlocks down below his fucking shoulders.
Oh, my God.
He showed up wearing fucking black cargo pants and a black fucking Batman t-shirt. And it was the funniest, in a bandana on his hair.
Oh,
like, and it was, like, in sunglasses. And we're just like, that dude's a fucking cop. Like, what the fuck? And it was so funny because... There were not a lot of black students at OU at the time. And then, but two of my friends were black, so they were sitting on the porch and were like, we don't fucking know that guy. He's a fucking cop. So my one friend, Kendra, went up and she's like, no, I'm going to go up and talk to him. I'm like, Kendra, don't. And she's like, what? I don't have a fucking beer on me. He's wearing a Batman t-shirt. I read all the Batman comics. I'm going to go up and I'm going to ask him about Batman. And she went and we're like, Kendra, don't. We're like, don't step off the yard. Like, if you get on the sidewalk, then that's public property that can arrest you. If you're on the yard, but on private property. Uh-huh. So she's still, like, right over the yard and started quizzing him about Batman comics. And of course he knew nothing. Because he was a fucking 45-year-old cop.
Right, just picked a random shirt.
God, it was so fucking... But, yeah, like, that guy feels like that fucking cop. It was like, dude, no.
Yeah.
Or, like, those cops who would be like, I'm gonna Black Lives Matter protest, and they have, like, a little
Marine haircut. They have the bandana, and, they look like a fucking cop.
Yeah, the Marine haircut, and they're wearing, like, cargo shorts. It's like, dude, no.
Come on, bud.
Yeah, there's so much I love about this show, but,
anything else you love enough to...
I guess one more thing I want to say real quick is, we were talking about Saul before, but I do want to say his whole, he has that, that second interaction with him and Luthen on his planet, and I love that, like, when Luthen gets searched by his guys, he's like, what's going on? And one of them's like, he's in a mood. Like,
oh,
okay, thanks. Thanks for letting me know.
Yes.
Yeah. I was like, do y'all kiss? No, I'm kidding. But I could also see it. All right.
Yeah, because I feel like...
You see them kiss? You're going to see Luthen and Saul kiss? Just once? One time?
No. Saul has repressed mommy issues.
No, Saul's fucking old Rex.
I can see
Saul
that
Rex.
Too.
Saul Rex. The Rebel Arc, remember the Rebel
Young
Arc?
Young Saul, old Saul is fucking no one.
No, like the rebels are him and yeah, Rex do that whole thing on Geonosis, and they're very like buddy buddy. They're like, oh, so good to see you again, friend, old friend. They keep touching each other. I'm like, oh, what's happening?
I think he's got sister issues. I don't know, man.
Yeah, he does, obviously. He clearly has. Anyway, the whole point I wanted to say with this is I love that whole idea that he brings up, like, that's when he wants to join the Krieger's Rebels. Mm-hmm. And Luthen's like, no, you shouldn't do that. It's a bad idea. And Luthen kind of exposes himself of how much he knows.
Yeah.
And then also, I love the idea of, like, he's like, well, you have someone everywhere. You have someone in the ISB. You have someone with Krieger. You have someone, like, do you have someone here? And he starts, like, looking around. And I love that, like, he's like, yeah, Tubes. Tubes is my guy. Like, his second in command. And he's like, well, what the fuck? And, like, he basically starts this whole argument. And then Luthen uses that, like, this really tense moment to turn it around and be like, that's why we can't tell anyone.
Yeah.
Because then they'll know we have someone. And they'll be suspect of every single person. If we stop the rebels, if we pull them back, then they're going to know someone told something, and they're going to think everyone is the informant. Yeah. It doesn't matter if they even find my informant.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be so cracked down, we're not going to be able to get anything done.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I love his ability to turn that around like that.
Yeah.
I also love, like, the implications of it. And then Saul ultimately agreeing and basically, like, he's like, he feels bad about it and then, like, says something like, well, let's just call it war or something like that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that whole interaction that I think is very interesting and, well, very well written, which is the whole thing with this whole show.
Yeah, and I feel like it's a very, like, gray, dark areas of, like, the rebellion, too. Like, it's...
Because you're like, we're letting, like, 30 of your allies, your people you're working with, die. But at the same time, you're like... But I do get why we're doing that.
Like, yeah, and I feel like it's a thing of... Yeah, I feel like this is why it's, like, recontextualizing everything and such. I feel like this is what I've seen a lot of people say is this is the only time they've ever understood, like, why someone would fight with the rebellion. Like, I know I said that, but I saw that, like, other people saying that, too. Like, I get this now. It's to the point of, like... it's just, like, the full fucking understanding and of, like, these actual, like, gray areas. And, like, I like it's, like, not everyone is really framed, like, fully as, like, a hero. Like...
Yeah,
to tell you the truth, I don't fully... I've watched the original trilogy twice. Like, I don't really... Like, I know Mon Mothma was there, but, like...
Right.
Of this now of
being... One scene.
Yeah, like, barely.
Yeah, so but now we...
Somebody in charge of some kind of council or something.
Yeah, but now it's... We think of this whole thing of then she's just like, well, my family has all this money. I'll use it for a good cause. But then she's so terrified of being found out that she's doing it that she's like... You know, betrothing her daughter to some fucking sketchy billionaire son because she's just like, well, what the fuck else am I gonna do?
I know we talked about it in Rick's Road because it mostly happens in there, but her of like framing Pyrrhon for the I'm still obsessed. Oh, it's
so
with that.
Good, yeah.
But she's doing a real shitty thing. Like she's doing
But also Pyrrhon is a shit. But
right.
Like,
yeah. Right. But yes, like, that's that whole ideal of like everyone.
She's framing her husband and using her daughter as a pawn.
Yeah, everyone that we're seeing that's on the good side is making these sacrifices that are really bad and are really kind of compromising their morals and the things they do. Especially, like, Luthen, like we said, of, like, we're letting people die, he won't let the spy leave.
Yeah.
Like, you know, she's basically letting her daughter be married off into what she suspects is going to be a pretty unhappy marriage.
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah, and, I mean, and it's almost at, like, every level with that, too. Like, Cinta's blown... Like, Cinta had... Like, basically blew up her own relationship because she's like, no, I'm too dedicated to this.
Everyone's in prison.
Yeah.
Everyone's in some sort of prison, yeah.
Everyone's in the prison of fascism.
With their hands.
With their hands.
That they could climb out of.
They might have to climb out over other people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the... I love Andor. I think it's perfect. I can't wait for season two.
Yes.
I think they have just about started filming, but it was like 3 years. To this season.
So well, if this is the quality we get.
Also,
if this is the quality we get, I'm willing to wait.
Right, that's true.
Well, I'm sure we're not going to cross over. Maybe season two, we will just do regular episode by episode.
Yeah.
Regular episodes like we do with...
See what's going on.
We used to do with the Mandalorian.
We will be doing
episode by episode with the Mandalorian. Speaking
also,
of that...
I was just going to say, Visions just got... Season 2 just got announced, all the...
Oh, yeah. The people. Little... The animation studio ones.
Not just Japanese this time. It's a bunch of just... There's one American. There's a couple of South American companies.
God, I can't remember their name.
What is the animation studio that did Chicken Run?
Yes.
Oh my god.
He's gonna be doing a Star Wars thing.
No!
I can't wait. I wonder what it's gonna be.
Oh my god.
I like that it's not just Japanese companies this time.
Yeah, they picked like worldwide.
A bunch of people. There's one that's just from South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so Mandalorian, we will be...
Yes.
Oh, yes, so I guess after this quarter, I was thinking possibly... I released the last episode on Friday. I was thinking, maybe we'll see. This is kind of long. If I can get this released on Friday. So we'll do, like, maybe coming out every Friday before the Mandalorian starts. Would you be cool if, I think, maybe two more episodes? All right, so I guess that's all we have to say for now about Andor. We'll probably bring up Andor in different... contexts, and then
it'll definitely be our comparison point for a little bit of like, why is this so bad? They made Andor,
but I feel like the Mandalorian is a separate thing than Andor.
It's good.
It's a different genre, and that's fine. Like you know what I mean. I feel like that's where some people are like, everything doesn't have. Andor is getting a lot of critical acclaim and everything, and I think the absolutely worst thing Disney could do is say, we should make everything like Andor now, pretty and dark and adult.
I like it because it's different.
Yeah, but that is the worst thing.
That's what happened with DC. That's the reason DC's all shit, because it's all grimdark now.
What they need to do is realize that stuff can be very good when you give the people who do it creative access to tell the stories they want to tell.
And in the way that's what they want to tell. And I feel like that's how this works for Andor. I don't need Din and Grogu to be in a situation where anyone can get killed get killed at any moment.
They don't need to be actively fighting an anti-fascist revolution.
Yes, I don't want them to be in some situation where Pelican gets shot in the head and murdered at any moment.
Yes.
No, I don't want that for the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Here, yes. Like, yeah, twist kid, he can get killed. Like,
right.
Or like Bix can get horribly tortured. I don't want Pelly to get horribly tortured.
That works in this story, but...
It doesn't work in Mandalorian. It's fine, because the Mandalorian's not that serious, and I'm fine with that.
We can have different levels of...
seriousness,
Yes. Yeah. Everything doesn't need to be at this heightened level.
No.
Things can be good in different levels because of different reasons.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to try to have our next episode, which will probably be What You Missed on Book of Boba Fett, come out on February 17th.
Do we want to switch those?
Would you rather have the...
I don't know if it would be better, the predictions or the, like, What You Missed On first.
I would do What We Missed On first.
Okay, it's going to play into predictions.
Because that would be, because we're going to talk about, like, the...
Armor
being a fucking crazy cultist now. So we will be back on February 17th talking about What You Missed On Book of Boba Fett, because it will play a lot into Mandalorian Season 3. So in between then and now, if you have anything to say about Andor, we are BleakishOwPodcast@gmail.com and BleakishOwPod on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. If you stumbled upon our podcast without knowing how to spell it, we are BleakishOw.
BRIIKASAK.
All right, and we will see all of you guys next time talking about a good chunk of Book of Boba Fett, which was actually about the Mandalorian.
Yes.
So,
God.
See all of you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Sukui.
Retoshimi. Kawashi.
I didn't say Sukui. I meant... I said hi.
Bye.
Bye.
'Cause that buffered their first. I think it just buffered again. Hopefully it's fine. Okay, keep going. We'll find out. Wait a second, let me pause so I can get it. Yeah, I need a mic. Okay, we're on mics. Okay, yeah, wow. <laughs> Um, we'll cut this out. You don't know we're trash. <laughs> Can we pause for a second? Yeah, cool, we'll grab another one. <sighs> I need to forget today. That way I can't find it. This shit I really liked in a bad Australian accent.
Glad that picked up for an outtake. Okay.
Broke a rib.
Ah.
Over binding, I think.
Over binding?
Damn. I mean, I don't remember hitting anything. Like, I don't remember. At one point I was loading in the stretcher and I kind of like, but it was an empty stretcher, no patient on it. Like, and it kind of like got stuck and it hit my ribs for a second. I was like, oh, just gave myself the Heimlich maneuver. But it didn't like actually hurt. Thank you.
better.